From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for May 19th, 2023. Checking the calendar, the Brewers are spending the weekend in Florida, Tampa to be exact. Just a reminder, the West Dallas Farmers Market is happening Saturday, and today's national day is a twofer. It's National Pizza Party Day and National Devil's Food Cake Day. I'll start my diet tomorrow. Seattle area drivers of Mazdas from 2014 to 2017 have an unusual problem. The radios are stuck on NPR stations, or should I say NPR stations. Maybe during their annual fundraiser, they can auction off some working radios. The state of Florida has issued its annual gator warning. It is to remind tourists and locals that we are right in the middle of alligator mating season. Gators have a single purpose this time of year, so you really don't want to get too close, not even if they send you flowers and candy. We have another Florida story. In Brevard, Florida, after his karaoke request was denied, a Florida man grabbed his machete. And doesn't everyone go to karaoke bar in Florida with a machete? No word on the song he wanted, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't Don't Worry, Be Happy. A man was stranded in the Caribbean for 28 days and survived, eating only packets of Heinz ketchup, garlic powder, and rainwater. It all worked out. He lived to tell the tale. And because of the free publicity, Heinz is buying him a new boat. He almost died, but he gets a new boat. A Kansas driver in a Bud Light beer can costume was arrested on suspicion of DUI. You think? On the podcast today, we have Mike Helsel, Kendall Bauer, Joel Dreesing, and wrapping up the week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, Max, I think a long list of what not to do this week from you, so thanks for that. Strong week overall for markets. The NASDAQ up 3%, closing at 12,658. The S&P up 1.6%, closing at the bell at 4,192. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, maybe a little less relevant to the current markets, but certainly a positive week there as well, up 0.4%. Despite down 109 points for the week, we closed the week up 126 at 33,426. For the year, again, the Dow up 1.7%. S&P up 9.9, and the NASDAQ a pretty stellar 21.4. So, you know, overall, a strong week for the markets, and really political landscape seems to be the thing that has caught so many people's attention. Kendall, as we look at the ongoing debt ceiling conversation, there was some confidence coming into the middle of the week that maybe we'd have something done, some kind of soft deadlines put as, hey, we'd like to have something done by the weekend. And then Friday morning, you had a few politicians step away from negotiations. The word pause came out. We're not ready to conclude these debt ceiling negotiations. And it turned a market, at least with the S&P, that had bumped up against that 4,200 number, which had been a pretty hard cap really for the last few months, negative again for the day on Friday. Still got a positive week, plenty to be happy about, but that debt ceiling conversation is still the one that's hanging out there.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, a good reminder to clients why we invest and why we build portfolios the way we do. I mean, this is the type of thing that you can see short-term in the markets. Markets can react volatile to a couple of sentences one day and go the opposite direction the next day simply on the word pause. I think long-term, not a major concern. I think they do, you know, we're hopeful that they'll get a deal done on the debt soon. And if you remember back in 2011, when they got close to that deadline and went a little bit past and had some last minute kind of deals, and okay, stocks fell a little bit in the short term. And, you know, a few months later, 6-8 months later, whatever it was, they were back up to where they were. So reminder, I think, when we go through volatile periods, whether it's this, whether it's inflation hikes, to really, number one, remember you have a plan in place, at least with us, right? It's why we preach the benefits of a balanced portfolio, but to keep your eye on the long term as an investor.
Well, of course, the frustrating part of that conversation is how little control we have. You know, we can control the risks we take within the portfolio. Generally speaking, you know, the balanced approach you talk about is one of the ways we mitigate the long-term consequences of, you know, short-term challenges like this. Of course, The problem is, this is one of those that no matter what you do, you're going to get wrapped up in it, because you can't just step away and know for certain when a deal is going to get done. If it does get done this weekend, it's not like the markets are open where you can turn around and buy back in. And once that deal does get reached, and again, I think we're all operating under the assumption that eventually it does, once that deal does get reached, you remove that major element of uncertainty and allow stocks to come back to what actually matters, which is long-term fundamentals. You know, Mike, we got any number of pieces of new information this week. Target, Home Depot, Walmart all reported earnings. Important to kind of the bigger economic picture because, you know, consumers, 70%, personal consumption, 70% of our economy. And as we look at, you know, where people are spending money, it certainly has been shifting. But most recently, you know, Target in particular, Home Depot in particular, pointing to people spending less on impulse purchases, spending less on maybe some of those goods that we had been buying for a long time, and spending more on the essentials, in part because the cost of those essentials have gone up, and in part because, you know, just as a whole, things have become less affordable. But I know you talk to clients about this one all the time. There's more going on underneath the surface than just the inflation conversation. You know, I think there's a lot of reasons why maybe the pendulum has swung a little bit away from just buying those goods.
Yeah, and it just comes down to the psychology of the consumer, right? So, I mean, I've said this before on the podcast, but it bears repeating. When we were all at home, working from home, you bought the TV, the office chair, the gourmet coffee maker, even though I don't drink coffee, but some people have, and that's their choice, because you were at home forever, right? But now that shifted away from, we're not home anymore. So now there's less impulse, as you say, to buy those things and more to spend on the essentials. But also, they're now shifting spending more towards event-based spending, right? Like traveling, concerts, stuff like that. I mean, I talked to, and it all goes back to kind of the thought process of a lot of people, especially some of the older clients I talked to, retirees, lost a year and a half of their life. And as one of my clients said to me, he goes, Mike, I don't have a year and a half to lose. So he's like, they've shifted their spending more towards travel and stuff like that because, and the example they used is, they have grandkids out west. They used to go out once a year. They'd come here once a year. Well, now they're buying less stuff for their house and spending more on travel to go out there two or three times a year because they missed that time and they need to make up for it. So yeah, there's a shift in the spending. It'll come back eventually, Kyle. You've talked about it before, everything is cyclical, but it's just fascinating to see now, and it's something I brought up before, it's just the psychology of the consumer of where their mindset is now and kind of where it could be going in the next 6 to 12 months.
And Mike, there's two things that I find incredibly interesting about that. The first is you worked at a coffee shop and you don't drink coffee.
Yeah, no, it's awful.
The second is that going back to 2017, the chief sustainability officer at IKEA came out with this concept of peak stuff, right? That we, as a fully developed nation and other fully developed nations, had really reached the point where we had all the things we needed. And yeah, we'd need to replace stuff occasionally, but kind of the era of growth for goods was behind us. And so we saw, you know, I think we saw with especially, you know, your kids, my kids, they're a more services-focused generation, whether that's travel, eating out, than a lot of the generations before them. You add in then, though, that we had a pandemic in which, yeah, you lost that year and a half. And it turned into, well, I have all this excess cash, and yeah, maybe I don't need to refinish the basement, or maybe I don't need that new flat-screen TV, but I'm spending a lot more time in that house, and I'm watching a lot more TV, and yeah, maybe I don't want to watch the thing that everybody else in the house is watching, so I'm going to buy that one more TV so I can watch my Brewers while everybody else is watching the Cubs. That's a personal problem in my house, maybe. but, I mean, to be clear, that became part of the conversation. And so people reached that point where, yeah, those impulse purchases at Target that Target was worried about in their first quarter earnings report became part of the problem. Because people didn't need those things anymore and they weren't wrapped up in, well, okay, I'm going to get it because I might want it a month from now because I'm stuck at home and I might need something to do. And so the focus on those essential purchases became a bigger part of the picture. It's why Walmart's earnings were okay, because Walmart is focused on those essentials, whereas some of those other retailers a little more impulse driven, a little more goods based driven than some of the rest. And of course, the other problem with what we saw with Target, Home Depot, Walmart is that's the first quarter. That's already pretty dated information. And Joel, we had retail sales data this week that gave us a little more insight into April, things maybe picking up a little bit from where we were in the first quarter?
Yeah, it looks that way, Kyle. We had greater spending, 4% increase in sales in April over March. It's down from the year before that. I'm sorry, it's up a year before that. But if you, one of the things that's interesting looking at the retail numbers is correcting for inflation. So a lot of the extra spending that you're seeing in retail is because prices are higher than they were a year ago. So if you correct for inflation, actually retail sales were down 3.2% from where they were last April. But even with that, I looked and corrected for inflation, the retail sales are up 12% from where they were just before the pandemic. That's a pretty healthy increase. And a lot of it, as you said, has shifted. A lot of it was goods, and now it's more services. We were seeing continued growth in bar and restaurants. That's where a lot more spending is taking place. But a significant one, and I think, Kyle, you pointed this out, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal looking at automobiles and how I looked up today, the Department of Transportation does an average age of cars on the road, and it's 13 years for the average car right now, as opposed to 9 years back in 2000. And I don't think that's all improvements in cars in that time, but people have been hanging on to their cars longer, in part because of, you know, some uncertainty about their economic fortunes. But as long as the job picture is as good as it seems right now, that's probably going to change, that people are going to start buying cars more.
You know, I'm a fan of this idea that the plural of anecdote isn't data. And yet, you know, you look around our table, we've got people that are in the car market or have been in the car market recently. Any number of family members, clients that I talk to who want to buy a car, who just can't find what they're looking for. The dealer doesn't have it. If they do, they want far too much for it. If they can get a good price, the interest rate they're going to get on the loan, if they need to take out a loan, is far, far too high for it to be a reasonable thing for them to do. And so you look at the pent-up demand that seems to be out there in the auto market, and you look at the sales price of what a car is versus, you know, what a TV is, or even a fairly big ticket item that just isn't a car or a plane or something, you know, that's massive. You only have to sell, you know, a car to make up for a few TVs that weren't sold. You don't have to sell, you know, one for one. And so I think the reality is, if we get a little bit of a pickup in the auto market, that offsets a lot of spending that's not happening in other places. That doesn't help the Targets of the world, who are hoping that more people come in and buy that TV, that video game console, that toy for their kid or grandkid. But when you look at the big picture economy, it is money that's being spent. It's just being spent in different places. And so the takeaway I continue to have from these conversations is that we're in an environment in which we're still finding equilibrium from COVID, that things swung so far one direction, they swung so far back the other, and we don't even know necessarily what normal spending for cars looks like or normal spending at retailers looks like, because we're still comparing it to a year ago when spending was so different than it was the year before because of COVID, which was so different the year before because we were in kind of the pre-COVID era. And so I think we're still in many ways dealing with the reverberations of this pandemic, even as, you know, we now find new ways to get back to whatever normal is.
Kyle, there's a great line in that article in the Wall Street Journal where they're talking about how car sales could keep the economy humming. The last sentence of this whole long article says, "The distortions to the economy the pandemic created mean that nobody should put too much trust in past historical relationships." So yeah, it's kind of like everything's kind of up in the air because you don't know all of the effects that COVID is going to be having on stuff.
It's funny you bring up the car part of it, because I had a conversation this morning with a client who was in the market for a car, and the only interest rate they could find for the loan was 8%. On top of not being able to find the one they wanted, they found one they kind of liked if you squinted hard enough. And then the two dealers they went to, they were like, well, 8%. And the wife was like, yeah, we're out. We'll just wait. And I think also something I read of part of the reason why people are keeping their cars a little bit longer, to your point, Joel, is something you brought up before. They didn't drive them for a year and a half. So if you were putting 12, 15, 20,000 miles on, well, now you got 30,000 miles built in that you can still drive it. So, yeah, that's an interesting part of, like, where the auto market is going.
You know, we spent a lot of time looking at the retail stuff, and we got that economic news this week on top of the earnings pieces from some of the big retailers, but some other economic news as well, industrial production, capacity utilization, things we look at on kind of a what's the path for inflation look like from here, and, you know, maybe a little more of the same.
Right, yeah. So the industrial production overall is higher than it was before we went into the pandemic. So that's a good thing. And it rose 0.5% from March to April. And that includes manufacturing, a rise in manufacturing driven by the automotive industry. Manufacturing was up for the third time in 4 months, so that's impressive. Overall, manufacturing is still below where it was before the pandemic. And then you mentioned capacity utilization. That's looking at how much of all of the machinery and so on that's in industry, how much of it is being used, and it's at its average for, you know, the last 51, 52 years. So that's pretty strong, but it was above that more recently, and that's usually a sign that there's inflation in the pipeline. But as we've seen with some of the hard inflation numbers, that's come down.
And of course, the comments I was making earlier about reaching peak stuff again, you know, relates in part to household formation. That if you have more houses out there, if you have more people forming households, well, they need to fill those houses. And we got data this week on kind of the housing market. Not all great news there.
No, but, you know, as we've been repeating, that the Fed has been raising interest rates to try to slow down the economy. And one of the first places to be hit by interest rates is housing. So we had numbers on housing starts and building permits and existing home sales. And they're all down year to year. And, you know, kind of expect them to stay that way. The National Association of Realtors is expecting this to be a pretty lean year and maybe start going back up again next year.
You know, real quick, it was just interesting you bring up housing, because I listened to a podcast this week, and they talked about housing and the slow housing. And there was a survey that was done, and forgive me, I don't know who did it, but so my apologies for that. But the point of it was, they asked people where they felt comfortable mortgage rates buying a house. And it settled at around 5.5. Like, that was kind of their breaking point. If it went above that, they weren't going there. And right now the national mortgage rate's around 6, 6.5. And so I'm curious to see if it gets down to 5.5, does that speed up kind of housing, like the housing market? Because it just seems like that's the psychological barrier, 5.5, for a lot of people looking to buy
houses.
Yeah,
and that's a year ago it was at 5.3%. It's about 6.4% now. In November, it got up to above 7%.
Yeah, and the hope is that you know, builders keep putting new houses on the market, that if interest rates do come back down a little bit, as so many are predicting for later this year or even early next year, that provides a little more support than what we've seen for housing. And you know, again, I think housing is such a regional specific issue that there's more nuance than just what interest rates are. But ultimately, it's a healthy thing for the economy when the housing market is humming along. It's a healthy thing when we see auto sales and retail sales doing what they're doing. And all of it kind of influences how we view, you know, the path forward. The path forward for now seems to be that the economy has slowed a little, that there are signs in certain areas that slowing is continuing to take place, that all of that is by design in attempting to get inflation under control, and that, assuming we can navigate those issues with some grace, that later this year or early next year we start to get back to a more normal growth environment. With that, we enjoy doing the program for you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.